A few thoughts on teacher well-being. Firstly, many thanks to Tanya Harding and Martin Rea for their fantastic contribution to yesterday's TLT14. It was really enjoyable collaborating with them and helping put together what seemed to be a warmly received presentation on stress and teacher well-being. So, on the back of that, I'd like to begin by drawing together two often quoted words in education and try and see how they talk to each other and how they perhaps should talk to each other. Firstly, the quality of any educational system can never exceed the quality of its teachers or indeed their teaching. And secondly, teacher and pupil well-being is merely two sides of the same coin. So, if teachers really are regarded as a prized resource in education, and if we really do have an ethical, moral and legal duty of care to address pupil well-being, how might we define a preferred tomorrow that actually reconciles those two sentiments with the notion of teacher well-being? So, briefly, 20% on the problem, 80% on the possible way forwards. I'll do a separate post on that, but I love and I'm strongly influenced by the work of Steve DeShazer and his solution-focused thinking, which has many, many ripples for what we do in schools for another time. Okay, so teacher well-being and stress have probably become almost synonymous and, dare I say, ubiquitous in terms of the feedback we hear across the profession, indeed, not even just the profession, but how it affects the lives of probably most people that we meet in some way and in some different levels. So firstly, it might be beneficial to try and define what is stress and how might it relate to a wider understanding of mental health and well-being. So stress, quite simply, I think, but with a lot that sits behind it, stress can be defined by the gap between the demands of life's events and our perceived ability to cope. Now, that's significant, perceived, because as Lazarus and Folkman have identified, stress is more than a physical response. It has a cognitive and emotional interface, which essentially means how we think can influence how we feel, which can influence how we behave in terms of the stressors that we face every day as teachers. And it may in part also help explain why some people react differently to the same stressors. So, this also seems to resonate very well with the key headlines of the Harvard health psychologist Kelly McGonigal. I don't really have too much time to go into this because I want to make this a very brief post. But if you Google Kelly McGonigal, Making Stress Your Friend, you'll take a few key headlines from this which seem to resonate with the influence of our thoughts and feelings at a cognitive level and how they have concomitant, if you like, ripples for our physiological response to stress. I would also highly recommend the work of Robert Sapolsky on this area and the impact of stress and control in the lives of teachers. And what a key phrase that he talks about is this: if you turn on the stress response chronically doesn't mean bad, it just means over a prolonged period of time, for purely psychological reasons, you increase your risk of adult onset diabetes and high blood pressure. If you're chronically shutting down the digestive system, there's a bunch of gastrointestinal disorders you're more at risk from as well. Don't really have time to go into that and talk about parasympathetic rebound, but probably the most common headline for most people in that area would be ulcers and the risk of stomach ulcers, which happens after the rebound phase of a stress response system. So, I like this area. I like this area of addressing stress. It's, what can we possibly do in terms of, one, recognising that stress exists in our lives as teachers, but more importantly, what can we do, one, at an individual level, and two, at a systemic level, to address this hugely, hugely important area in teachers' lives. So we're all very aware of the hugely successful campaign of encouraging kids to eat healthier by having five a day, five fruit and vegetables a day. But if we use that and we transpose that analogy, what would an essential five a day look like in terms of teacher well-being? Have a think about that. So, the New Economics Foundation, the Centre for Wellbeing, they identified five key steps to wellbeing. To connect, it's important to have a social family, a social community, the ability to talk, to interact with others. And that again, overlaps very clearly with what Kelly McGonigal says in terms of the release of oxytocin and our body's way of saying, go find somebody to talk with, go be with someone. Human beings are social animals, and that's a very important part of our stress response. Be active. Have a balance. Exercise is really important. Take notice. That's a key point. That attention is a key point that Paul Dolan talks about in his book, Happiness by Design. Keep learning. I think we know that. Teaching is learning. And none of us, or any of us, can ever think to ourselves that we get to a destination in terms of understanding ourselves and understanding the world around us. And a really important one that I say to kids at assembly, altruism is good. Giving without wanting or expecting to receive is a very powerful stress response in terms of reducing what our levels of stress can feel like at times. Ten other key headlines very quickly. And these include, one, is it feasible? Could we have a mental health nurse, qualified of course, not a member of staff who goes on an inset course for staff and pupils? Don't know, money may have an impact. What we can control, identify your stressors, your triggers, that is essential. Self-awareness is the key point for changing behaviour. Three, consider what you can control and what you can't. And the work of Sapolsky is very, very clear in this area, as is the work of Circles of Influence and Circles of Control. Do what you love, but have a work-life balance. Five, manage your time well, and when enough is enough, say no more. Not, I'll just stay in the office or stay at school for another 15 minutes. Pick off the negotiables. Sometimes you have to learn to say no. Seven, embrace mistakes, or at least don't drown in perfectionism. Eight, understand the difference between caring and worrying. Nine, be positive. It can have a big influence. And 10, accept there are things that you can't change, but there are things that you can influence. And to finish, I like the question of five a day. It's worth asking in briefings, it's worth asking in departmental meetings until it becomes as important as discussing the school development plan or the school development report. After all, how can we hope to develop a culture or an ethos of reflection, self-evaluation, if these same processes are part or heavily contribute to the adverse effects on teacher well-being? The dissonance in that is so ironic it can become tragic. And for if we're really, really insistent on a values-led education, values-led leadership means walking the words and understanding that a duty of care extends to teachers. After all, why would you employ them in the first place if you didn't trust their capabilities, if you didn't trust their motivations, and you didn't think of them as being professionals? Thanks for listening. Many aspects of stress that I couldn't cover, but I hope in part this gives you a little insight.